But sir, you know, everybody wants to introduce something to the school curriculum. Lord have mercy. You can kill the poor teachers and the children.
No, seriously.
All I'm saying here, I'm not trying to be ridiculous, but honestly, every time somebody begins to open their mouth and talk about you should have teachers in schools, you should teach that in the schools. God, man, I mean,
there's just
that amount that you can teach in the schools.
Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about teaching. I'm talking about realizing how the student is inclined and passing it on to the area where it's best needed.
Yeah, but you're talking there about looking at a types of streams. What you're talking about basically is vocational, looking at trying to see so we can streamline children along the lines of their abilities as has been identified. So some people should go do more vocational type studies, others should do academic studies, that sort of thing, correct? That's basically what you're saying. Some of that is done. I mean, a lot of the things like police coming in and whatnot into schools, and a lot of work goes into the schools. I mean, people talk about the schools, a lot of positive things happen on a daily basis in our schools. Okay?
I agree with you.
And a lot of it is featured in the nation. And I'm not advertising for the nation here, but I know it's a fact that they have these different programs. It's featured there in the nation. It's always on the inside pages, of course. So I know what I'm talking about here because you see them and they come in, all that information comes in there. You know. So the whole thing about it is we have a problem with some deviance and bad behavior and violence, but we have to have a comprehensive plan. That is all. We can't take a patchwork approach. It's not just about just doing A and B. Right. You gotta do the whole alphabet.
That's in how closing. In closing, thank
yeah, because I had you on really long. Question. I had you on really long.
I can ask a simple question, and I can bring one to you. When you were going to school, you were in an environment at school where you felt comfortable.
Always, but I mean, in any.
Well, say that I enjoy going to school.
Well, I enjoy going to school too, but that doesn't mean that you always in enjoy everything. But right? the whole point about it is not about being quote unquote comfortable. Right. It is about providing an environment in which. There is a level of discipline that would so that you don't get that level of unruliness discipline to stop people from learning.
Discipline that would influence the others who want to stray. I'm not saying, again, you're not going to get all good cause some will fall through the cracks, but there are some who would, with good discipline and influence, would make a change.
All right, sir.
Have a good day.
You too. Oh, education. Matthew Farley, I remember he had a program many years ago, and he used to say that education was the main thing in Barbados, the main issue for everything in Barbados. And every day I think he's absolutely correct. Anyhow, good morning, sir. It's 11:43. You are on the air.
Good morning, Mr. Price. How you doing?
Oh, how are you? I haven't heard you in a while, sir.
I want to primarily talk about education today. Because I guess that's the thing on
the thing right now. Yes.
Life Science Research Project. But before I do that there, let me say a couple things. Mm-hmm. One, congratulations to UPP for now having a member of the party and government. Okay? Mm-hmm. Congratulations to them. Mm-hmm. Congratulations to Gwen Arthur for his quote unquote distinguished career in politics and his contribution to Barbados. And ultimately, I believe that at some point in time, there has to be recognition for his achievements and what he has done for the country in that respect. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, I heard you earlier today speaking with the aspect of replying about the marijuana situation and the UPP's position on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, I'm going to congratulate them because I believe they are at least moving in the right direction. But my opinion is that it is not enough. And this idea of taking these baby steps towards legalization of small quantities of marijuana is an absolute waste of time. It should be full legalization across the board in order for us to, for society to benefit from the taxes involved in the growing of marijuana and the people who are then want to consume it or what have you. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
If we have to ask ourselves, what does the research show? And there's tons of research to show that the experience of countries that have full legalization of marijuana, that's had it for years, was the experience
legalization or decriminalization?
Legalization. I'm talking about where it is in places in Europe, where you in like Portugal and those places, that it is free to use marijuana. There's no issue about it. That they have the marijuana cafes and those sort of things. What is the research showing of their experience, those countries? Have we had this massive increase in death or what have you? Has marijuana been shown to be so detrimental to the health and existence of those countries? What about all the money that we are seeing now in Colorado and those places where the tax revenue is coming in from the growing of marijuana and those sort of things? The problem we have in Barbados is that we fail to take advantage of opportunity when it presents itself to us. We wait too late. And then after everything is gone, and there's no more opportunity, and now we choose to get on it, then we say, oh, well, it's too late. We've missed the boat.
All right. I just want to stop here because you're making an interesting point, but I also want to bring you and listeners who may have missed it because I was searching for it while you were speaking. I remember reading The Gleaner some time ago. This is your Jamaican Gleaner, where how the National Council on Drug Abuse in Jamaica were very concerned about the psychotic episodes that ganja abuse was having on young people. Now, this is 3 years ago. Subsequent to that, they also said a number of things about it. And they were extremely concerned and about decriminalizing it in this because of the impact it can have on young people.
But Mr. Price, hold on.
It is an issue. And just a second, I can leave talk. We get on the road. You know you're one of my favorite people too. We get on the road. But it's also an issue when you think in terms of the situation that we have today where we have such violence among young people. So you have in one hand in Jamaica where they are complaining about the psychotic episodes that so many young people are having because of the increase, or as they say, the alarmingly high percentage of youth having psychotic episodes from ganja abuse. So it is an issue that has to be, it is an aspect of the issue that has to be examined.
Good. Now, let me respond two ways in that respect. One, abuse of anything is a concern. Okay, abuse of alcohol, abuse of sugar that causes diabetes, right? So therefore, that is a concern, a given concern. But one of the things which I told you is, first and foremost, we have to look at what the research has shown and the overall effect on the country, okay? So therefore, the question is, will full legalization of it and decriminalization and all that there, will that then... does that not have the probability of reducing the incident of abuse? Because you have to understand, why is it being abused in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
And in a lot of cases, people, the young children especially, the youth especially, will abuse it because it is seen as a way of rebellion. something which is antisocial or whatever, or counterculture, so therefore you will get involved in it. Mm-hmm. Or for those reasons to start. So therefore, it's not just enough to say that the effects of the abuse that these that people are concerned about what will happen or what have you. Mm-hmm. The challenge is you have to look at the reasons why that would be driving that. And then if you look at the evidence in the European countries and see then that if they have full decriminalization or what have you, and there is no such abuse, then you have to understand that the reason to use the marijuana in that respect has been removed from that. Right. And also the baby step.
Before I let you go into the baby steps, what I'm going to do is we're going to take a quick commercial break. So just hold on. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It is 12:08. Sir, are you still there?
I'm still here, sir.
Thank you so much for for waiting, because I didn't realize there were so much ads.
Not a problem.
Yeah, we were making the point of dealing with...
The point with the aspect of baby steps, okay? Mm-hmm. What I mean.
Baby steps towards legalization of ganja.
Right, the baby steps towards legalization mm-hmm. that make absolutely no sense. Mm-hmm. What ends up happening is that you increase the use... You're going to substantially increase the use of the marijuana smoking in the society, okay? Mm-hmm. For sure, because obviously you decriminalize it, people are going to want to use it or try and use it. But then the society doesn't benefit from it. Now think of it this way, somebody has to produce it. So therefore, if you allow people to use it, somebody has to produce it. So that means it either has to come in to Barbados, and if it does, then that's foreign exchange that has to go out in order to buy it. That's the first thing. The next thing is that the small quantities that people use individually, they don't get taxed, okay? It's not like a pack of cigarettes that you can buy at a store whereby the cost of the cigarette in there is the cost of the tax or whatever, value-added tax, all those sort of stuff that then goes to benefit society, okay? So therefore, what you have to do is end up treating it just the same way that you treat tobacco products. They're not supposed to be sold under children of a certain age or what have you. They carry certain warnings on them. They carry a high price in terms of the cost to buy them. Okay, they're limited. You can limit the locations and stuff as to where such and such can be purchased. And then you can benefit from that tax revenue. Okay? So then
During the break, sorry to cross you, but I think your point is made. But during the break, I took the time, we were taking the time here to look at what was happening in Colorado, where there's a level of decriminalization. And you found that actually the revenue intake is not as high as they anticipated. There's a lot of leakages going on in that, which tells me that, one, you have to really look at what is happening with the drug itself in terms of the industry that you're trying to develop and try to plug a lot of those holes. We need to do that.
Hold on, just a second. Uh-huh. When you say not as high as anticipated, what are you saying? Because if I anticipate $1 billion and I only get $500 million, then yes, it has not been as high as I anticipate, but the problem is it's been high enough. That's the first thing to that. When you speak about leakages, define to me what these leakages you're talking about.
Leakages really basically would be where people are trying to circumvent the laws to even get more drugs in there, more drugs.
Right, but those are different issues as to whether or not overall the impact that it would have on society. Those are totally different issues.
Well, and that is the area that I really want to get to, because for me, the whole issue needs to be thoroughly crashed out, because the main thing that I am concerned about is the health of people, especially young people, who use marijuana or any other drug. But let's focus on marijuana, because this is what the UPP is suggesting. This is what you're talking about. And there's one other party who also suggested it. And I think the government, I think Mr. Jones, Ronald Jones, was talking about it at some point. That we should be looking at decriminalization at some point. I hope I'm not misquoting it, but I'm sure it was Ronald Jones who was suggesting something like that.
Mm-hmm. First, do not link marijuana with drugs like cocaine thing.
I am okay, not linking it. I know.
But just a second. Hold on. Hold on. Just a second.
But it is still a narcotic.
Hold on. So is alcohol. Okay. So is anything that goes.
There's only one big difference. One is legal and one is not. But
exactly. But the reason the legality again is just is the question is the legality a matter of a health concern? Or is it legal?
Well, let me deal with the one that's the health.
Economic or what have you concern, or political concern. And the legality, the reason why it was made illegal in the first place, when you do the research, you understand that it's strictly for political reasons. Nothing to do with health. Okay? Right. And it's also been shown there's the health benefits of marijuana.
Before we get into health benefits, I also want to look at the impact. But before I even go to that, I'm joined here now. We are joined by Peter Wickham. Peter, are you there?
Hi. Yeah, morning. Good morning, Shankar.
How are you?
Thanks for letting me chime in. But you know, this gadget discussion always excites me.
Yes, sir.
All right.
You wanted to talk about the decriminalization of marijuana.
Yeah, no, a couple of things. I think one of the points that was missed was the extent to which the youth levels in Barbados, I think when we had measured, when we did the study on government's behalf, we found over 30% of Barbadians are using marijuana recreationally. That's not an insignificant number. So when the caller was talking just now about the fact that, you know, the youth could go up or whatnot, I think that there has to be an appreciation of the fact that, I mean, already this thing is so widespread. It's illegal, but yet still it's being used recreationally by, you know, one-third of the population, and I think that that's significant. One of the points I agree with him on, though, is the idea of commercial benefits. And he was talking about the Colorado example and how not as much money has been made as expected. Mm-hmm. My feeling is that in Barbados, we are not going to stand to gain financially from any decriminalization of marijuana because, I mean, we don't really have an agricultural tradition to start with. And I think if we take the route that they took in both Jamaica and Antigua, because Antigua decriminalized, where you allow people to have small quantities of personal use, what you do then is that you snuff out the import market, which is not a bad thing. You kill the import market, but it means that you will have people growing small quantities for their own use, and there will be less of this commercial production, so to speak, and importation as we currently have. So I agree with him that there's no benefit financially really, but I think that the benefit is social in that we will be able to control and regulate an industry which right now is out of control because of the illegal status. We can regulate a lot better if it's decriminalized. And then we don't have the social problem of people being locked up and charged and so on for having criminal records for smoking something which one-third of the population does. So I just wanted to throw that in the pot for consideration.
All right, thanks, Peter. Let me respond to this. I'm dealing here now with the Dangerous Drugs Amendment Act of 2015 from Jamaica. And in that act, it's a minor tickable offense to possess 2 ounces of ganja. Cultivation of 5 or fewer plants in any one household is also allowed. And Rastafarians can use ganja for sacramental purposes. All right, so that is what is allowed in Jamaica. But also, one of the things to note is that the Ministry of Health in Jamaica, and this report is from last year, April, the Ministry of Health reported a 50% increase in the number of children seeking assistance for ganja-related problems at public health facilities since 2015. This is after the law came in. Okay, and the National Council on Drug Abuse in Jamaica, they also reported that 70% of Jamaicans have easy access to ganja, and that young children have been trying it out. All right?
Right.
So,
as I said, that is where...
Last point. The main concern here, as I said, because this is from the medical, I'm on the site of the Medical Association of Jamaica. Their main concern is that the envisaged post-decriminalization public education campaign on how and how not to use ganja, especially for young people, never really took place. All right?
Exactly. So what I'm trying to tell you, Asanka, is that the challenges that we have surrounding the decriminalization or whatever relate to other aspects of society in terms of trying to enforce something, as opposed to whether the actual harm or mm-hmm. benefit that the drug itself does. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yeah.
The evidence shows from Jamaica or whatever shows that you there will be an increase in use, especially among the youth. Mm-hmm. But again, you expect that spike to happen, and it then will trend down, depending on how you socially approach the use of it. Tobacco, there was a spike in tobacco use when the advertising used to be pushing and that sort of thing. And then the warnings of cancer came out, then the limitations in terms of use came out, mm-hmm. and that sort of stuff. And it became now socially not as acceptable for people to be smoking anymore. Mm-hmm. So therefore, that trend comes down. So therefore, the fear that we're going to have this massive increase or whatever, and then that's going to lead to this destruction of society, you have to abandon that. You All have right. to now take advantage of the opportunity and move on there.
All right, but now, I got to cut you because I want to get at least a couple more calls in before 12:30. But the whole thing about it is that what we have to do in this whole debate on decriminalization of marijuana
is talk about it.
No, yeah, we got to talk about all aspects
right.
of the situation, and we have to really look at it with the from the perspective as well of what is happening with our youth right now. And that's
okay, let me please make this one
quick point. 30 seconds
with the education, right?
Mm-hmm.
I agree. The introduction of metal detectors in schools is an absolute waste of time. Okay, absolute waste of time. We have to have the spot checks. We have to have this. We have to have policemen coming in, turning up at schools, and then going with teachers with, let's say, the portable metal detectors and doing random checks within classrooms and that sort of stuff. The idea that a teacher by themselves can do this here is wrong. Mm-hmm. You're putting teachers in harm's way. And the problem I have is that what we are trying to do is to shoehorn children into an educational system that totally needs revamping. It is totally outdated. It belongs in the last century. And we are trying to abdicate, adults are abdicating their responsibility in changing it and putting the blame on children and talking about deviant children and all that sort of stuff. Children are children. It is our responsibility to find a way for them to learn the things that they have to learn and to make sure that they are socialized to become good citizens in the end.
Right,
it is our responsibility, and we are abdicating that responsibility.
All right, sir. Well said. Thank you very much for calling. We had a long run there dealing with marijuana. We'll take another call before the 12:30. You're on the air. Go right ahead. Good afternoon. You are on the air. Please stop listening to your radio. This is Brastats. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
Well, I know I don't have much time, but I'll try. I've even lost. I'll give up today. Let's see where it's going. All right?
You have 10 minutes.
Let me put my mouth. Okay, let me come to the point. What I want to look at is that the parliament is going to be dissolved in another couple of days. There's some questions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's some questions that I need to ask, and there's some positions that I want to put that I believe can be answered. I read yesterday in today's paper the minister responsible for public works referred to the fact that there are not many buses and problems with transport, and that he will be discussing with the private concessionaires the possibility of enhancing the problems at the transport board. That mm-hmm. sounds good. But I, some of the people in Barbados know that the private concessionaires, somewhere along the line, some of the vehicles, almost as old as some of the vehicles that he complained about. Let me get to the point. I want to ask a question. Is there another company in standby to negotiate with the transport board for the ease of the problems that they encounter now? I'm asking the question, if there is another company, probably I might be in the center, I might be on tour, something like that, standing by, that will help as far as that is. Understand it, so he doesn't need to hold back. He can come out and let us know exactly who is the company outside of the private concessionaires he's negotiated with, so that we will know there will be a relief coming to the transport. The second thing, couple of weeks ago, the Minister of Water, David Esri, said that somewhere along the line that there would be a possibility of getting $13 million from the people at Dubai. You remember that? Mm-hmm. And that this was supposed to be spent on the South Coast project. Now, there's some questions that I want to find out. Within the last 2 days, there have been a statement coming from the same minister where he said that they'll be spending $12 million. Now, there's a difference between 12 and 13. He explained that they will be digging 4 wells, and out of that $12 million that they'll be spending, $8 million will go to the wells, which will be dug at a depth of 297 feet. My question to this particular situation, is this part of the $13 million that at least has been put aside or has been granted or has been loaned from the people of Dubai? And what is going to happen with the other $1 million? That's the point I think we need to know. Yes, we want to get the South Coast project sorted out, but I think we also need to get clarification on certain issues. I also want to ask why it is that there is no day-to-day setup on that situation. We have had 4 advisories. I remember when the prison broke down, that the minister responsible then took it upon herself to invite the press for sessions every day to give the people an update of what was going on. And that was a serious issue. This is also a serious issue as far as Barbados is concerned, as far as health and as far as international acceptance is concerned. I'm asking, where is the secrecy? Where it is that we cannot be provided with a day-to-day setup of what is going on the South Coast? Also, why it is that a local company by the name of Poly, I read in the paper in January that they have offered to assist as far as the problems are concerned. Why it is that they have been refused? Somewhere along the line, these are questions that I believe Mr. Price can be answered, because the public know that there will be the public parliament will dissolve shortly and these things are open. The other point that I want to raise with you, they have just at least amended the Criminals Act, right? The Police Act, right? I want to remind people that in 1974, around there in the 70s, there was a public order act that was introduced by the then government. 1976, they were out of office. I want to show that people were disenchanted then with the public order act. I want to show that people are disenchanted now with the Police Amendment Act. And there's a very close relationship between the public order act and also this amendment to the Police Act. So are we going to have a good change of heart in this one, or are we going to at least get people saying it's good for Barbados? Is that? But if we really stand and study, people are forgetting the public order act. They're only thinking in terms right now, Mr. Price, as far as I'm concerned, of the amendment to the Police Act. But standing in the wings in support of what is going on now is the public order act. So I'm asking these questions. I think I'm asking these questions in the interest of those persons who are concerned. Now, the final point, which I'm taking my time as offered, is quite simple, and that is to say that the Transport Board, we know, as the Minister said, you and I know that when there's a change of government, there's also a change of boards, right? New ministers are appointed. Mm-hmm. There's a possibility. I want to know that within this recess, when Parliament dissolves on the 6th, what will be the position if a contract could be drawn up with a private concessionaire, because it was mooted weeks in advance? And if that is the case, I think it is not fair. I think what would happen, or what should happen now with any statutory board, since the Minister of Finance has declared that as far as statutory boards are concerned, that he's going to put in place a way of controlling the spending on the statutory board. So I think if this is supposed to be one of the things that they've been looking at, and likely that they will not win the government, then yes, you can't set up statutory boards, or you cannot set up things that when the next government comes into power, that they will have hurdles to cross. Because it isn't only the government that will cross the hurdles, it's the population of Barbados and the taxpayers of Barbados that would have these hurdles to cross. So of course, it will be a hurdle. As far as I'm concerned, you're looking at the various taxes, implements that we put in place, because you're $2 billion down in a deficit. Where's the money going to come from? Where's the money going to come from? So I am of the opinion that we are seeing the last days of this government. I'm also of this understanding that the new government in power, coming in power, will not have it easy because of the road that has been dug up in front of them in order to pivot and get it back better for a better Barbados, then Barbados is going to have to sacrifice. Because if you read the Democrat Labour parties, and it would be very political now, but you can. So if you read the Democrat, and I tell anybody who've got the 30th anniversary booklet of the Democratic anniversary Labour Party, read the Constitution of the Democrat Labour Party, read it. I'm sure that Barrow, the former founder of the party, is not comfortable. And those of you who are members of the party, read the Constitution and see if the Constitution does not conflict with what has happened to David's government. Go back to February 13th, 2011, and realize that you have a situation where there was a Niger 11. There was a Niger 11. What has happened? What has happened? We are now seeing the play of the Niger 11. We are seeing the delay of Parliament. We are seeing the delay of Parliament probably to pay back for what happened on the 13th of February 2011. And this is not fair to the population of Barbados. It's not fair to the voters of Barbados. I know people can come after me. I know people will come after me, Mr. President. Let them come after me, because when I call the caller poll, I call the caller poll with constructive points for Barbados. And I think people understand this. And if you go back to the things that I've called the call-in program about over the last couple of years, you would say, that man has really done his research. And that man has really brought his points to form. It's still here.
All right, Mark. We had a good run until 12:30. We're going to break now for the latest. Roberta Dove is already in place and raring to go. So we'll take a break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Brass Tacks. It's 12:44. Before I go to the phone lines, because we have only another few moments to go before we close at 1, I'd just like to read two quick WhatsApp messages here. The first one, I go to a fast food restaurant, I won't call the name, with my grandchildren on Friday evenings. If you see the children from secondary schools there, no supervision whatsoever. They behave as they like. These children go to these fast food outlets on evenings before they go home and behave in the worst way. So that's a young lady who's come talking about the situation with that takes place at fast food restaurants and the behavior of their young people there. And then this one, these were the whole issue of marijuana. Miss Agard and her party, this is Miss Maria Agard and her party, apparently want to use marijuana as their way forward to win an election. Letting you grow small amounts in your backyard, allowing you to carry small portion on you being without you being charged, really? And she want to be leader of this country for medicinal purposes? No problem. Anything else, you're asking for trouble. Take a look at some of the users in Jamaica, Miss Agard. That is what you want for our youth? Talk backyard gardening if you want to talk about planting food to eat. So those are some of the views on our WhatsApp today. We have a call. You're on the air, sir. Good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
Yes, I heard a few of your callers earlier today discussing the whole issue of students at school being searched and the whole business of violence and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as usual in Barbados, we seem to have this knee-jerk reaction whenever certain incidents of this nature occur. The whole issue, first of all, is nothing new. And secondly, I think I would have heard one of the previous callers refer to the Education Act. There are enough mechanisms there which would empower the principals and or his designates, teachers, to search children if they reasonably suspect that the child may have some form of contraband, whether it be an offensive weapon or an illegal substance. So we don't need necessarily to look for some new way from heaven or wherever to deal with this problem. The problem is not new, and there are mechanisms in the Act already. What needs to be done is that persons need to make themselves to avail themselves of the legislative powers that they already have. That's certainly one way of dealing with it. So the teachers and the education authorities are not powerless to deal with these little children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your point is well taken. I agree with you totally.
Right, because totally. the first or one of the primary duties of the school, of each school principal, is to ensure the safety and security of the compound and those who are there. And one of them, obviously, is the powers vested in him and teachers to search children at random. Mm-hmm. Right? Obviously, the statute sets out the manner in which it's to be done. A male staff teacher can only search a male student, but female teachers can search both male, either male or female, and it must be done in the presence of another party and so forth. So there are mechanisms there already, you know. So let's not throw our hands up in the air and behave as if we're so powerless, or these little children are so out of control and you can't call them back. You know, that's just, like I said, that's just one way of dealing with the problem. Mm-hmm. Right? Obviously, you have to look at other facets as well, because there's no one way to fix the problem alone. A multifaceted approach must be looked at. But certainly, the teachers and so on are not powerless to deal with these things as they arise.
Yes, sir. All right, sir. What about this whole idea of metal detectors? You want to touch that?
And no.
What is your take on that?
No. Generally speaking, I do not believe we have reached a stage in Barbados where our children are that out of control on a wide enough scale. You have pockets of violence and so on, and because of social media and so forth, those little pockets are magnified, and people believe the problems are bigger than they really are. The majority of students in Barbados, the majority of young people in Barbados, are disciplined, law-abiding, and so on. Mm-hmm. Right? Specifically now on the issue of metal detectors, you made the point that there are some compounds which are not properly secured. And even those that may
some?
Be secured, there are breaches.
Some?
There are breaches all over the place.
Most of them aren't.
Yeah.
Most of them aren't.
Harrison College has had a breach on the eastern side that adjoins Weymouth for years. Mm-hmm. You know? And that's just one example.
That's
but
this one.
Having stationary metal detectors may not be the most effective way. If you're going to go the route of scanning and so forth, perhaps the portable one.
Yeah.
And indeed, again, but it comes back to the mechanism that's there already. Mm-hmm. The act allows teachers to search children. Mm-hmm. And I am sure teachers who interact with these children on a day-to-day basis know who the vagabonds are. Mm-hmm. So these persons can be easily identified and dealt with appropriately.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to, but having a metal detector on a compound that could be as big as a secondary school, especially where you have a population between 8,000 to 1,000 people, may not be the most practical form of dealing with the issue.
Mm-hmm. All right, sir. Hey, thank you very much for your contribution, and I totally agree with you. Totally. We take our next call. It's 12:51. You're on the air. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon to you, sir. Thank you very much. Good afternoon to everyone. About the politics and the parties, the UPP party with the Honourable Miss Lynette Eastman. I want people to understand that in politics, it's like horse racing, that you can get a rank 99 to 1 outsider coming and set the whole field. So people must not be got this belief that the UPP can't win the government when election come, because there can be an upset, and that is something that has happened all over the world. It ain't nothing new. So people must not got this kind of impression that, well, that the DLP might win back, or the BLP might win back the government. No, you never can tell in politics. The UPP may come from nowhere and affect the whole apple care, you know? Yes, you do?
Yes, sir.
Yes, so, you know, and about the discipline in the schools, what I find, sir, that is strange is that it is like certain schools you just have these problems. That I'm sure that there are certain schools, like a certain school like this close to a historic place, that you don't hear children from that school getting anything. And it is strange, you know, it is only children from certain schools that you just hear this continuous thing over and over and over. And the thing is, when children, what the parents got to do on the morning is to read the way up. Or even the night time when they come from work or whatever, they say, look, you going to school? You ain't go to school to do this and all kind of make disruption. You go to school to get an education. It is something that parents got to drive in their children before they go to school on morning and at night every evening, read your way up over and over and
how
over.
Would you how would you respond, sir, to this WhatsApp message? Please tell us why these situations is of a violence and this bad behavior with our children is not that prevalent in private schools. Are the parents of those children, do the parents of those children instill better values and morals in their charge, or is it that the principals of those schools nip situations in the bud?
Well, sir, what I would say that you when you see certain schools that big shot children just go to, I believe those people, this discipline, I mean, the other lower class or finer class will do it too. But I believe those big shot people and thinkers, they might do a stronger, a stronger urge. And you don't find that because, for instance, so you won't hear that the grandson of Mr. X or the granddaughter of big shot Mr. G or Mr. G getting anything. And I find that strange, you know, that why it is only a certain class that, you know, that is getting these kind of things. Even, for instance, or just shifting the topic slightly, that you will see somebody in the road get gunned down.
Mm-hmm.
And you will never be an Indian, never white man. It is always an ordinary look class. Ordinary black man, that thing a black man like himself.
Some people will argue, sir, that because we are in the majority, like 95% of the population, that is why that would happen. But anyhow, I want to take at least one more call before we go.
Yes, thank
have
you,
a great
thank
day,
you.
And thank you for calling. You're on Brass Tacks. Good afternoon. Turn your radio off, sir. Turn your radio off. Yes, go right ahead.
I'm going to start the radio off. Right, can you hear me now, Mr. Monica?
Yes, go right ahead.
Right, now, I really want to comment on this thing about sandals, but with your conversation going on a bit about education, let me just ask a question about it. Now, the law says that the teachers can search children, but I want to know if the law dictates a commander that the teachers do.
There is a what? Sorry, I lost you there. There is a...
Okay. They said that the law said that the teachers can search children who come into school, like for weapons and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to know if it also says that they must do it or they're commanded to do it.
But they're minors, and when they go to a school, they are under the supervision of adults, of responsible
right.
adults, who are supposed to maintain discipline. And that is one of the forms of discipline where you
right.
recognize you have a problem and you do carry out random searches. That's why parents in their homes can carry out random searches. That's why these things are allowed. Because those are some of the measures that have been recognized that need to be put in place to keep children in the straight and narrow.
Right. Good reasoning and everything. But what I'm saying is that I believe that today's teachers may not be willing to search children because this is a bit different from teachers of yesteryear. And some teachers would say, look, I am not going to search anybody's child. No, I'm not going to search the bags or anything of the sort. So that's why I'm trying to establish if it is mandatory for them to do it or if they can do it. It's only the feeling doing it.
Mm. Well, sir, right. I'm not sure myself of that aspect, but what I'm minded too, is I remember that Mr. Jones, the Minister of Education, was making the point that looking at the contract of security guards who are posted at these schools, because I mean, it is government security guards who are posted there, and it would be good if some of them would be armed with the mobile scanners, and they would be accompanying teachers doing this sort of thing, you know. And in any case, the teacher who should be doing that would be somebody who would be a senior teacher or the principal who will be doing those searches. That can also be done. The point is that measures like these have to be done throughout the school system, and they will get to the bottom of a lot of the weapons going in. Of course, that does not necessarily deal with the whole thing of bad behavior and deviance, and that has to be addressed, but that can only be addressed when all the stakeholders sit down and begin to talk about it in an environment where everybody is there to get the best deal out for the children of this country. We need to talk. That is what we need to do as a country. We need to talk with each other and not talk at each other. We need to talk with each other. And that is one of the main things. That's the only thing that's going to really help to solve this problem. Anyhow, thank you very much for calling. We got to go. It's now 1 minute to one. And I'd like to thank everyone for being involved and calling and writing. We've had quite a few WhatsApp messages, and yes, I'm sorry I didn't get to them today like I normally do. I like, of course, to say my fond farewell to Prime Minister Owen Arthur, who said he'd be no longer taking any part in